the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Dun, 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 dun. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners Podcast, special Tuesday edition, because I like Dave Bradley so much. We decided to bring him on in the middle of the week. Why the hell not? Before we start, as always, our sponsor, EasyDNS. You know him, love him, okay, Mark, and the team over there doing all the best stuff. They got domains, DNS, of course, in the name, web hosting, VPS hosting. So if you have a Bitcoin node, which you should, I do not, but you should. BTC Pay server, which you should have if you're selling stuff. I do not, but I also don't sell stuff. But maybe you do and you should. Nostr Relay, all that good stuff you can do with them. Plus, move your email away from Gmail. They have GPG encryption there. So if you want to send something out from EasyDNS's email server, they don't even read it. They can't read it. Very easy. Get your email off this data mine nonsense that everyone uses over at Gmail, including us. We got to work on that here at the CBP. They have an email migration tool. So if you want to move your stuff over, you don't have to do it by yourself. They're not going to hang out to dry. You're not going to be on an island. They'll help you. And that's important, man. That kind of stuff is difficult. It's time consuming. So they'll give you a hand with that. And of course, you can buy all that stuff in a bundle, or you can buy it separately, pick and choose, a la carte, whatever. Use the code CBP Media, or just tell Mark we sent you. That'll be enough, I'm sure. Mark's been a friend of the show for a long time, even before EasyDNS was a sponsor. And so we're happy to be working with them, as you guys know. So Dave Bradley is here with Bitcoin Well, Bitcoin Rodeo. And Dave sent me a message a couple of hours ago about the great filter. And we're not going to start with the great filter, but we are going to get to the great filter and why it's important. Very strange content for a Dave Bradley appearance, but I'm here for it, man. I even thought about opening a beer, but I opted for high fat milk instead. So, buddy, first of all, what's going on? How are you?
I'm great. I went with both a high fat milk and an alcoholic beverage. I made myself a white Russian.
I love it. So
that's the right move, I think.
I should. You know what? I had to organize and participate in a bachelor party on Saturday. So I am like my kidney looking like a California raisin right about now. I'm hoping that I can bounce back in time for this weekend and probably do something else I'll regret. But yeah, man, I do like a good white Russian. That's a creamy drink. Underappreciated. Now, let me ask you something. How do you feel when you get just a tiny, tiny bit of curdling? Do you still drink it or do you just make it again?
I just don't have that happen. I don't know. Like you just mix it. You put the ice in, then you put the vodka and the Kahlua in, and then you pour the milk in last and mix it up. And it's like, I don't know. It seems like it always goes fine for me.
I get a little bit of curdling once in a while and you know, it's disgusting, but I still drink it, Dave. I got to be frank with you here, buddy. It doesn't really bother me that much. I'm sure I've had worse things. I'm not going to finish that sentence. Anyway, so where do you want to start? We got some news out of the Bitcoin Well camp today, some coverage initiated. We got the Bitcoin Rodeo coming up, the Canadian Bitcoin Conference coming up, and I want to hear your thoughts on what just happened in Miami. It's been, you know, talked about quite a bit over the last few days. Today, they had, I think two spaces, one with Foss and Udi and maybe one other one. I forget exactly who was in there, but I'll leave it to you. You pick, and I will guide the discussion as always, sir.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got a bunch of things to shill. I have first, the easiest thing to shill is this piece right behind me here, this amazing Madex. He brought over today for this very reason, so it could be on the wall. The last one that was up there on a podcast sold, so hopefully somebody sees this one and comes and buys it. Then I'll have an empty wall again. Yeah, and then we've got a bunch of news with Bitcoin Well. We're continuing to work on the online platform that's taken a lot of our focus these days. We've got the recurring buy DCA coming out this summer that we're hoping we can make some really good strides the way that we have with our other products in terms of just making it the usability and the easiest possible user experience for people that are not necessarily that experienced in the space. So we're excited about that. And then, yeah, you mentioned we got this research coverage. It's not very much fun being a public company in the Bitcoin space during a bear market. You know, you pretty much go public so that you can get those great valuations when the bull market hits. And we like just missed the last bull market. So we're kind of in the doldrums when it comes to stock pricing. And we're hoping that this coverage, which they identify that they think we're severely undervalued, we're hoping that that can get out there. So, you know, everyone should do their own research on stocks, and we're like a, we're a highly speculative penny stock, but I think there's probably some upside, and I think that the research indicates they think there is. So I would recommend people go to our website, bitcoinwell.com/investors, and there's a link to the research coverage on there under analyst coverage. And yeah, it's like, it's really thorough, gives you a good high level overview of what the business is and what they predict the outcomes will be. And, you know, everyone should do their own research on anything they invest in. And this is probably a, hopefully a useful piece of information for people to do their own research and understand a bit better what we do.
So you guys have, I mean, when you say undervalued, these guys, Fundamental Research Corporation, has you guys at a buy fair value 16 cents a share from five, which was your price on the sixth. I think you might be four now. I don't remember exactly where you're sitting now, but yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about this high level? You know, I don't know how much you can say given that, you know, maybe everything you say is under a bit of scrutiny, but you know, if you want to give some high level stuff or maybe what you agree with, what you disagree with, I'd love to hear it, man. Cause I know a lot of people who watch this show are interested in Bitcoin equities as well as Bitcoin, the asset. And so why not?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm limited. Like I'm not allowed to promote the stock per se, but I can present facts, and that's pretty much what this research does. I didn't see anything that was untrue in terms of the facts in this research. And they're basically just breaking those down, and they've got their whole methodology in there as to how they come to that 16 cents. So people can read it and see if they agree. What it comes down to really is that our share price related to some of the metrics in the business, namely our revenue and our EBITDA, is much lower in comparison to those other numbers than most of our peers in the industry. So that's where they're drawing that 16 cents from, is they're looking at, you know, who else is public and how much money are they making, and then they're comparing us to those. So they think we're undervalued. I would probably say that I think we're undervalued. You know, I take a good chunk of my compensation at Bitcoin Well in shares, and that's all publicly available data as well. It's a company that, you know, I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in. So I think it's just good to have that information out there. You know, I'm glad that there's eyeballs getting on the stock finally, because that's one of the biggest challenges, is getting people to actually look at such a small company.
Yeah, the you know, when we talked to Adam last, he was on here a few months ago, and one of the things that we've talked to him about, and you know, he's been pretty forthcoming in the way he's defended the cap table, right? You guys have a lot of agility because there's no big money influencing the direction of your company. If you look at the people who own the stock, it's you, it's Adam, it's a lot of guys who are, you know, to your point, not only believers, but they're really committed to that share price going up, right? There's a sort of a match incentive there that's not really not present in a lot of publicly traded Bitcoin companies, if I'm being honest. Like, we've talked a lot about how the miners are sort of this weird play on, you know, what is it, fees? Is it Bitcoin on the balance sheet? It's hard to see where long-term revenue is going to come for shareholders. But you guys sell a product, which I think differentiates you. You guys feel the same way? You must.
Yeah, I mean, there's been really two very big business models in the Bitcoin industry, especially that have hit public markets, but really that have hit anything in terms of the VC markets or any kind of investing. And that's companies that sell Bitcoin and companies that mine Bitcoin. And yeah, I mean, I don't actually think it's very complicated to evaluate companies that mine Bitcoin. I think that you can do the math pretty easily. And in most cases, the math doesn't really add up. Like, you'd be better off just buying the Bitcoin to get the exposure to the Bitcoin price. We're hopefully a little different in that our business tends to thrive. Like, we get a boost when there's a bull market, but we tend to thrive on movement. So we get more volume when it goes up or down. And that puts us a little bit closer to being really like the digital shovel salesman of this gold rush. It's like, we're just a service provider, and we sell Bitcoin. We make it easier for people to buy Bitcoin, and that's where we make our money basically. And that's like, I've been doing that for 13 years now. That's been like most of my adult life. That's been my career, is selling Bitcoin. So that, I think, is the simplest and the easiest to understand section of the Bitcoin space. It's a tried and tested business model, and we've got a bunch of different ways to do it basically.
Talk to me about the Bitcoin savings account and some other stuff you guys coming down the pipe, before we move on. Because I know you guys are building a lot of stuff. You know, Bitcoin Wall has been friends of this show for a long time. And I'm always interested in hearing what companies are doing to, you know, automate may be the wrong word, Dave, but like to get people on board without the additional hurdle and sort of points of friction. I got to go to the app. I got to click buy. I got to move it to cold storage. I got to do this and that. What do you guys have coming down the pipe to remedy some of those problems?
Yeah, I mean, we've really simplified things with the online platform with our current payment methods. We're the only platform that I know of where you can just have an address saved with us and you don't even need to log into the platform to make a purchase. You just send the e-transfer and you get the Bitcoin. So it's like literally the simplest possible way to do things when it comes to our current system. And that's kind of the same philosophy we're looking at taking to the recurring buyer, like the DCA product. Is, yeah, we want to automate it as much as possible. We want to try and do that without causing a lot of on-chain bloat in terms of a whole bunch of small transactions. And we want to essentially just make it as easy as possible for people to be buying Bitcoin on a recurring basis. And part of the reason for that is this move that we're doing with this online platform, and where we want to go with this is really increasing the usability of Bitcoin. And a big part of that is just having more touch points. So the more often someone's buying Bitcoin, the more total transactions they have, the more likely they are going to be to actually care about, you know, what can I do with this? And the more they're interacting with us and our platform, the better that is for our business, and the more different ways that we can interact with them in a way that would be like, here's how you either buy or sell Bitcoin, here's how you can use Bitcoin, or whatever else we can get them into.
So I see that in my email inbox today, Dave, there's an email about the Well wallet. Do you want to talk about the Well wallet a bit, being discontinued in favor of something else? You have something else planned? What's going on?
Yeah, so Well wallet was originally Rise wallet that we built, that we bought, which we bought primarily as a digital gift card platform, where we could issue our own Bitcoin gift cards. And that is a really cool product that we want to put some work into at some point, but we really haven't been able to get very much market traction with that. Like, the whole point was that we wanted to get these gift cards into like 7-Eleven on the gift card rack. So you could just show up and buy like a $100 Bitcoin Well gift card that you can then redeem for Bitcoin whenever you choose to redeem that. So it'd be really good for gifts. We have had some success with companies using it for corporate gifting, especially around Christmas time. So that was the main reason that we bought that product. It has a perfectly functional, if unspecial, Bitcoin wallet. There's nothing really that wallet does that any other wallet doesn't do. And it was a non-custodial wallet, which is why we liked it as well. And so we purchased this wallet. We put some time into trying to get it into the distributors, and we've basically determined that it's just not really quite ready yet. And because it's like, it's a code base that's completely separate from the one that we built, and it's not something that we have the internal expertise to really maintain, we just basically decided that it's, you know, it's better to just deprecate it. And if we want to rebuild this gift card feature in our existing platform, that's something we can do. And I think we will do probably fairly soon, because it's got a little bit of a niche. But yeah, we just determined that the actual app was too much work and too much money to maintain, and really nobody was getting that much value out of it. So we decided to deprecate it. And because it's a non-custodial wallet, it's like there are no funds to return. Everybody's still got their funds, basically.
Right. Are you guys, are you thinking about doing a phone app? I know like there's mixed feelings on that, including from me. I don't know how much I value a phone app, to be honest with you, but I know a lot of people do. And if you're trying to break into a market, get recurring buys, and maybe a product people want to use regularly, an app's got to be a part of that. Are you guys thinking about that? What's coming down the pipeline there?
Yeah, we're going to do an app at some point. It's not on our like immediate roadmap. We've got higher priority stuff that we think is going to make the existing platform more useful more quickly than an app will. An app doesn't really add any usefulness. It just gives users an extra way to interact with the platform, which is really nice once we have the time to do that. And I think we will at some point. Because it is like I'm the same way. I really don't care if there's an app. I would actually prefer to use the website. But there's definitely a niche of people that want to use the app. And it's something that we get as a question all the time from investors as well, is when are you guys coming out with an app? Because they're used to everyone having an app. So it's definitely in the plans for the future, but we don't have like an exact timeline for when we might have something like that, or what it might look like.
Okay. And no big deal, I guess. So before we move on, anything else you want to cover? Bitcoin Well, BTCW, you can't shill the stock. I won't shill it, but I will say that this research, you know, it's DYOR type stuff, and these guys did the research. There's a significant undervaluation here, according to these guys. If there's anything else you want to hit before we move on, Dave, now's the time.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. I think check out the analysis. If you haven't, check out the platform. It's humming really well. It's moving really smoothly, and it's like completely simple. It's the simplest way to buy Bitcoins in Canada, and it's the fastest, cheapest, and safest. So check
out. You guys have the best spread, right? On the e-transfer side, you have the best spread in the country, according to csspread.ca. I don't know who maintains that site, but seems to be pretty highly regarded. So
yeah, exactly. There's a little bit of variance because everyone kind of prices things differently, but generally we're the top of the list there. So
nice. Well, it's good to hear, man. I'm glad to see that. It's been fun watching you guys. Now tell me, we got to talk about the conferences. Okay. You're the conference guy now because of the rodeo. Maybe we should start with what's the latest for the Western Canada flagship conference. What do you guys got going on? How's the planning going?
Yeah, so it's going really well. We're going to be announcing most of the schedule here coming up really soon. We're kind of doubling down on the marketing in the next, you know, month and a half that we've got here before the conference. It's kind of the crunch time for that stuff. So we've got some cool stuff going. We just announced a promotion on Twitter today where we're doing 2-for-1 tickets as long as you bring a no-coiner. So if you try to use this with your buddy who's a Bitcoiner and sneak him in as a no-coiner, we'll know.
How will you know? I'm almost afraid to ask. How will you know?
We're going to have some very large, scary-looking security guys standing at the door. And I imagine that anyone pulling off that kind of a scam will just wither under the glare of these security guys. So we're going to know. Like, just don't worry. We'll know if you try to scam us like that. But the whole point of the idea is, like, you know, bring one friend. It's going to cost you the same as just coming by yourself. And if everybody does that, or even a large number of people do that, we're going to have a lot of new Bitcoiners. And that's a big portion of what we're trying to do here. So we've got some of our content, for example, on the first day, we're doing a Bitcoin 101. Julian from Connect Finance, you know, I'm sure, is going to be presenting that, like the first part of that Bitcoin 101, which is kind of like, you know, this is what Bitcoin is. This is why it's important. We've actually got way more signups for that Bitcoin 101 than we do for the main conference right now, which is encouraging. That part's free. So maybe not all of them will show up, but I think we're going to have a really good turnout for that. So Julian's talking about the why of Bitcoin, and then Ben BTC Sessions is going to be taking the next step, which is the sort of how, which is just like giving a really quick overview of, like, you know, some of the basics of, like, how do you get started? How do you set up a wallet? Where do you go to buy Bitcoin? And then from there we launch into the main conference. And so we're doing some other stuff, just like with these 2-for-1 tickets. We're working on an honor system. So if somebody's there for the free show and they decide to sneak in and stay for the main thing, they might get caught, or maybe they won't. And I mean, maybe they'll be killed in the alley, or maybe they won't, right? probably not. Like, it'll probably be fine. But we're focusing it in a way that we want to make it useful for brand new people, but we also want to make it engaging for people that are both intermediate and experts. Because that's one thing that I find at a lot of conferences is, like, I don't watch the content at conferences because it's all stuff that I've already seen on Twitter. And I've already seen the same people having the same conversations on Twitter. There's not really, like, that big of a benefit for somebody who's, like, neck deep in the whole industry to watch that stuff. And so we're making our topics a little bit more broad in general. So one that's coming up right after that I think is going to be really cool. Who we got on there? The topic's called How Bitcoin Changed My Life. And we're going to be getting a variety of perspectives from people who are not necessarily the people that you see at every conference up there talking about hard money. One guy, we put out a call and we were like, hey, I want some plebs to speak at this conference. And this guy messaged me and was like, hey, I want to speak. I don't know if I'm any good. And I was like, okay, send me a video of yourself chopping wood. And like, just like bullshitting, right? And then like a week later, he's like, here you go. And he sends me a video of himself chopping wood while talking about Bitcoin. And I was like, okay, well, I guess he's got to speak at the conference now, right?
That's a good idea. One of the things, and we can talk about Miami if you want. I actually kind of want to hear your opinion on what happened over the last week or so over there. But One of the things that, you know, is hard planning a conference, and I'm not planning the Toronto conference, but I am a little bit involved in the planning given my role as the MC. And one of the things that, you know, is difficult is watching the Miami conference really have two problems, right? One is that everyone is kind of playing their hits, especially with all these podcasts, right? Like everyone is just saying the stuff that you hear them say on every other show, which, okay, fine. That's okay, I guess. Like people still go to see Taylor Swift concerts. You know what she's going to play. You may have seen her before, but they still go and they still play top dollar. Okay, fine. But the thing that bothers me more is that it seems like there's an intentional push toward controversy during some of the panels, right? Which bothers me. Obviously, that Taproot Wizards thing with those guys doing that dance at the beginning. You know, Greg Foss has been in the news the last day or so because of his opinions on the conference and BTC Magazine and all that stuff. Do you guys, you know, are you trying actively to avoid that over in at the rodeo? Are you looking for panels that are going to wind up with a little bit of tete-a-tete? How are you trying to plan that stuff?
It is always interesting to have some arguments for sure. It was kind of funny because at the first time we did a Bitcoin rodeo, which was 2018, it was it might have been the first one, or it was certainly one of the first Bitcoin conferences that Saifedean did, and it was like right after the Bitcoin Standard came out, and we weren't as hardcore back then about who we were going to allow for sponsors and stuff like that, and so there was a bunch of shitcoin sponsors that we had on there. And we actually had this guy who had been one of the sponsors, and the company was horrible. They ended up like completely imploding. But we had him scheduled for a debate with Saifedean, and he didn't know what he was getting into. Like he was going to get just like completely demolished in front of everyone. And then he pulled out of the debate like the day before the conference, once he like looked up Saifedean and was like, oh shit, I don't want to be smashed by this guy. But yeah, it's good to have a little bit of debate. You know, I don't think we're going to have any shortage of interesting content. You know, we're sort of prioritizing for people who are actually like good engaging speakers rather than just like whoever has the most knowledge of, you know, Austrian economics sort of thing. So I think the content's going to have no problem being engaging, but we're definitely not chasing like controversy. And I don't know if Bitcoin Magazine was doing that with the whole ordinals thing. Like, it sure seems like they got a lot of legs out of that. And on the one hand, my initial reaction was like, wow, these guys like sold their reputation down the tube for like 2.5 Bitcoins. Like I'd be looking for a lot more money if I wanted to sell my reputation down the tube. But these guys sold themselves out fairly inexpensively, but then in retrospect, that was like one of the main things anyone was actually talking about. You know, I didn't go to the conference mainly because of that one detail. And, you know, like my good friends, Madex and Francis, were not going because of that same thing. And that art gallery that they had there has been pretty scammy the last 2 years. You know, there's been a lot of NFTs, which is very frustrating for the physical artists who actually put proof of work and their time and their sweat into their art. And then across the hall is some guy selling like $1 million dick butts. And it is, so I can see the frustration for the actual artists with that kind of stuff. And then they really just stepped over the line with this one. You know, it's hard to make a conference in this space without taking the money from the casino coin companies. You know, it's really hard to do something at the scale like they're trying to do without $1 million from Binance and et cetera, et cetera. You know, anybody who's been to that conference would agree that the majority of the sponsorship and the majority of the booth space was all taken by scams. Mm-hmm. And yet in previous years, when I've looked at it, most of the content has been Bitcoin focused and the speakers have mostly been Bitcoin maximalists, and the the messaging has all been Bitcoin, 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 but then they allow the scammers to set up sort of next door and on top of what they're doing as a way to pay for the whole thing. And they've always had to sort of walk this line between, you know, are we a shitcoin conference? Like, what differentiates Bitcoin 2023 from consensus? There surely is supposed to be something. And I think that they've crossed that line and gone past the point where they are offering too much space to the scam artists, to the point where it is hurting the message and the delivery of the message of what they're trying to do with the actual Bitcoin stuff. And I think that there was a pretty clear but vocal minority of people who did not want to participate because of that fact. Most people, I think, go to these things for the social element and the fact that it's just like, it's cool. It's a big party. It's like, there's a lot of stuff going on, and everybody likes meeting the people that they talk to on Twitter and seeing friends that you haven't seen in a while. And that's really the big appeal. And it was hard to not go for those reasons. Those are why I wanted to go as well. But at a certain point, you have to just say like, no, I don't want to participate in this, because, you know, as Dave Bailey, the CEO of Bitcoin Magazine said, he's like, you guys should come by the ordinals section. These are really fun loving people, you know, and they are. Like, there's a lot of people who are having a great time with these JPEGs, but the fact is that the people who are issuing and selling the JPEGs are scamming and stealing money from those fun-loving people who just want to buy things and have a good time and maybe gamble on some investments that they hope to make some more money on later. So that's the line that I think was crossed, is that the entity Bitcoin Magazine and the people running it are actively trying to scam their attendees at this point. And that's, you know, exactly the opposite of what we're trying to do with the Bitcoin Rodeo. And same thing with the Canadian Bitcoiners Conference. I know it's focused on the signal and Bitcoin itself, rather than all this other stuff and trying to make as much money as possible by promoting anyone who will pay.
I struggle with we talked about this yesterday on the show. You were in the chat. You might have heard this. I struggle with the whole thing about like the Bitcoin Magazine people. That I don't want to call them scammers. I don't know where I come down on this idea that like they're ripping people off. They are, I think, putting people in harm's way with the ordinal saying, great example, which I disagree with. But then I think about like the convoy, you know, in 21, and all I can think of is like, you know, Bitcoin Magazine really tried to support that group, right? They did as much as they could for those guys, put them on the cover of the magazine. I think they did a bit of a fundraiser as well. Who knows behind the scenes what else they were able to do? There's a lot of good Bitcoiners there. And so I think I sleep better at night thinking that, to your point, they understand that there's a balance between having the conference at all with the money you bring in from people who may not be central to the Bitcoin message and, you know, by the same token will not be the focus of the conference, but you need them there to fund the stuff that you care about. And it's like a really delicate line to walk. I've never organized a conference. I don't know. You've done a few of them. I'm sure that the guys, you know, up here who are doing the conference for the first time, maybe have done some event organizing, if not a Bitcoin conference. But you know, when you think about sponsors, for example, Dave, you know, not to put you on the spot, but if you think about sponsors for the rodeo, you know, what's the line for you? Is the line, you know, a Bitcoin maybe exchange that also sells Ethereum, or is it further down the curve than that? Like where do you? I realize it's a difficult question to answer on the spot, but I'm curious where do you think a conference should come down as far as putting people in harm's way?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I don't feel like, personally, and this is just like a gut instinct thing, I don't feel like I would personally be going against my own morals if I allowed a company that also sells Ethereum to sponsor. I don't think that's a huge problem. I think that there is an argument that you know, people should make their own choices, and if they want to buy something terrible like Ethereum, then they can do that. But I think that there's a big difference between a company like ShakePay and a company like Binance, where, you know, ShakePay is certainly responding to market demand for Ethereum, whereas Binance is actually driving the bus on these scams. You know, they're taking hundreds of thousands of dollars to list these coins that they know are scams. You know, they're paid very handsomely to use their user base and their platform to list this massive, elaborate web of scam coins. And so I think there's kind of like a line that everyone has to decide for themselves where that is. And I think that it's kind of like, I kind of know where that is instinctively, I think. And it's somewhere in between those two things of like the Binance and the ShakePay, where, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything that ShakePay does, but I don't think they're malicious actors who are doing bad things and taking advantage of their users for their own profit. Whereas I would say that Binance is a large scale criminal enterprise that makes billions of dollars off of the money that their users have lost to scams that they've promoted. And those two things are very far apart for me. Your point about Bitcoin Magazine is a good one. There's a lot of good Bitcoiners there. There's a lot of people that I know and like really well who work for Bitcoin Magazine. And I know that those people are trying to do their best and they're trying to do a good job. And they actually are hardcore quality Bitcoiners with good morals and good grounded beliefs. But they also are operating in this big company and they're all trying to keep the lights on and they're trying to do big things. And so I don't necessarily like, I didn't like it when I was there last year, or, you know, we Madex and I snuck into the FTX VIP lounge in 2021. You know, it wasn't very good, but like there are these companies like that being headliners or being attached to a giant event like that. I felt like they used to do a really good job with it because the content was so Bitcoin focused and the branding was completely Bitcoin focused. And the goal of advancing Bitcoin was largely being accomplished. And then I think when they crossed the line to actually issuing a scam coin themselves and selling that to their users with, you know, this is, to be clear, this is an illegal thing to sell. This is a security. And this is an investment that requires disclosure, and they have provided no disclosure. And the lack of disclosure is a huge part of the issue in this case, because it's actually like the thing that they should be disclosing is that this token is worth nothing. There's no actual link between the token and the art. And if they disclose that and people still wanted to buy it anyway, then, you know, buyer beware, to each their own choices and risk, but they're not disclosing that. They're making it seem like there is a way to separate this idea of the intangible value of art from the art itself and sell that separately. And that's just nonsense. That's a scam. That's the part where I think they've crossed the line. And I'm hopeful that they're going to go back in the other direction next year. And I don't anticipate that ordinals will be something that anybody talks about or cares about a year from now. So I think hopefully they'll take the feedback that they've gotten, which has been fairly significant from the community, I think.
I'm with you there. I think they clawed back a lot of the nonsense from last year, but the ordinals thing was just a step beyond even some of the clawback, right? There's two steps back after one step forward type deal, which, you know, not great. You mentioned Madex a few times. You know, I have two of those Madex shirts, the ones that you're wearing right now. And I'm going to wear one at the conference. I haven't decided which one. I actually messaged him to see if he had like a one-off or a special one I could buy off him to wear for the 2 days that no one else has. But he hasn't gotten back to me yet. He just asked me when the conference was again. So
Madex is not the best.
I see the guy's like, he's ATVing all day, every day on Twitter. Like, okay, man, I get it. Just fucking tell me so I know.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, man. And I think that I don't have a Madex painting, and, you know, Madex is just he's sort of exemplary of the problem with ordinals, right? This is a guy, and there are others like him. There may not be others as good, but there are others like him doing similar stuff, trying to prove that they're putting time and effort into making something that's valuable, especially in the art world where value is so subjective. And I can imagine how frustrating it would be to see after your clan, right? After the Bitcoin clan was so vehemently and vocally opposed to something like NFTs for the sort of BRC20 ordinals inscriptions crowd to come through. And I think, like, maybe too strong word, but like betray you after that, right? The same crowd who supported you, buys your shirts, buys your work, you know, pumps your stuff up any chance they get, even if they can't afford it. Like, I know he just started that subscription service, and this is not a Madex shill, but like, even if you can't afford it, like, he'll still take a bit of money from you to give you a chance to win one and help support the work. That's not something you see in the digital art space. What you see instead is discords where people are trying to pump and dump. I think the pumpamentals of ordinals, to your point, okay, they're not going to be around in a year. And I think these guys realize that, broadly speaking, Dave, and they know they got to kind of strike while the iron's hot. And once price goes up, no one's going to be willing to pay network fees and more Bitcoin for a picture of, I saw one today in someone's replies on Twitter, is like mesh beetles or something like that. Like, I don't even know what that is, but these things are everywhere. And it's got to be insulting to a guy like Madex and to others who are trying to do something like that, which really pisses me off. Now, that's enough conference talk, okay? We got to talk about this other thing. I don't know. You must be like, are you like a weed smoker? How did you come up with this thing? This is like, I know after we had Francis on, we were talking and I was saying to you that like that guy has like a religious fervor, and he basically blacked out for about 15 minutes in what might be the most popular clip the CBP has ever had, talking about Isaiah's job and the message and all these things. And like, I'm wondering if maybe you're going to outdo him today, Dave, honestly. Do you want to maybe introduce the topic to du jour, yeah, and we can go from there?
Yeah, yeah. So this is a concept that I've been thinking about a little bit lately, and it comes from mostly conversations that I have had with Francis recently, as well as Madex, but also where it kind of got started was a conversation with Mario Gibney that I think you probably know.
We love Mario. He's a friend of the show, man. Mario's a great guy.
Yeah. So we were talking about this concept very broadly, of the great filter. And the great filter is a potential solution to the Fermi paradox, which is a concept in sort of like outer space exploration science, wherein it looks like, from everything that science has concluded, that it is fairly likely that life evolves in the universe. And there may be, in fact, like multiple cases of life evolving separately on Earth. We're hoping to find life on Mars that hopefully will have evolved separately. And a lot of speculation that it should be pretty likely that life would evolve. And if that's the case, why haven't we seen any aliens, right? So that's the Fermi paradox, is like the fact that there should be a lot more aliens based on all the information that we have, but we've literally seen none. And so the great filter is this idea that there might be something about the nature of life itself, or maybe the nature of organized society, or maybe the nature of intelligent life, wherein there is a certain detail that makes it very hard to progress past a certain point. And that would be the reason why maybe life is evolving all over the universe, but it's never getting past the single celled organism, because there's a block somewhere that makes that very unlikely to go further than that. Or maybe that block, that great filter that we're talking about, is somewhere else in the progression of life. Maybe it's something that we've already passed. Maybe it's the ability to harness electricity or fire or something else that we don't know about. Or maybe it's something in the future that we haven't even encountered yet that we may or may not pass. And where I've been kind of going with this thought, and where I wanted to walk this down and kind of discuss it a little bit, this is the first time I've like discussed this publicly, is this idea that maybe Bitcoin or some detail about Bitcoin could be a great filter like that. And the reason that I say this, and the reason that this came up, I think that what we're talking about when we're talking about Bitcoin is really a civilization that has solved the problem of money. And when it comes down to it, the problem of money is the problem of how we allocate our time, right? And we have, with the advancement of technology, had an absolutely amazing, 300 years or so of technological advancement, where we're using more energy, we're generating more prosperity than ever before, and we're really cranking on an economic level like we never have before. Humans are way more useful, we produce more, we accomplish more, but we're heading down this path where even though we're creating all of this wealth and all of this value, a massive percentage of that value is being misallocated because it's being controlled, seized, taxed, or inflated away by centrally planned governments. And I would say globally, if you were to add up all of the totals of world taxes in addition to inflation, like we're probably talking something like 80% of all the value in the world is being allocated by central planning. And most of the value that's allocated by central planning, in a best case scenario, that value is having no impact. And it's very unlikely that it's having a significant positive impact anywhere. And the more likely scenario is that in most cases, it's actually having a negative impact. And that's something that we've seen with literally every government policy in the history of the world, is that they just don't have any idea what they're doing. It's not a good way to run the world. It's not a good way to allocate resources. And the major reason that they're able to misallocate all of these resources is because how poorly designed our current money is. It's designed specifically in a way that they can just take as much as they want in terms of the total amount of value that's created by printing more money and then spending it. And so the reason that I say that Bitcoin might be a great filter is because if we get Bitcoin really, really right, and it's able to solve that problem of money, and it's able to create a situation where the resources of the world and the massive and ongoing technological advancement and the prosperity that comes with that, if those are able to be allocated properly because of the fact that we have a money that allows real market forces to act on that allocation of capital, that could be the difference between where we end up as a global civilization 1,000 years from now. And, you know, it might be a binary thing. It might be a matter of, if we get Bitcoin right, we may become like a, you know, one of these very advanced hypothetical interstellar civilizations that reaches near post scarcity of resources and the creation of things. And we end up in a, like a Star Trek type, world where, you know, there's abundance and humanity is spreading out across the universe. And the opposite angle of that might be that if we don't get Bitcoin right, that maybe we end up sucked into a collectivist nightmare that eventually consumes all of the resources of Earth for, you know, whatever the new narrative is, whatever the fear they need to push this week. If they're putting all of our resources into those things with the goal of just increasing control, and we have a very small number of global elites that gobble up an increasingly large percentage of those resources and spend the rest of the resources of society to keep us complacent and in control, you know, if we get Bitcoin wrong and we go down that path, we may be in for a scenario where the majority of the human race dies off or stagnates. And those two outcomes are like wildly different. And the reason that this came up was kind of some of this stuff that we're talking about with ordinals. And you've seen Francis freaking out about all the different filtering, and like, you know, there is a bunch of filtering in Bitcoin Core. And those are like non-consensus changeable rules that are just the defaults that filter out all kinds of different transactions. And the interesting thing about this conversation to me is that, like, there are a whole bunch of constants in Bitcoin. You know, the number of coins, the issuance schedule, the number of blocks before a change happens, the way that blocks, the mining difficulty adjusts up and down. And all of those constants were set somewhat arbitrarily a very long time ago without really any information. And there's a chance that, like, the fact that those concepts were set rather arbitrarily is the right move, because I don't think asking the experts is the right way to go. I don't think that's the kind of thing that we can accurately measure or figure out. But there's also a chance that we just, like, have already gotten those things wrong. And maybe we're already past the point where some of those details that we don't yet understand will be the doom of Bitcoin someday, and therefore the doom of humanity in the long term. So I think where I would draw my conclusion from all this, and I've been very nervous talking to Francis about, like, he wants to introduce filtering and all this stuff. You know, I've been nervous to, like, to do anything with Bitcoin at this point. And I kind of feel like we're getting to a point maybe where we just have to accept the risks that we've taken, unless there's, like, a very clear, broad consensus that there's a detail about Bitcoin that's wrong. You know, I think that the way that Taproot was activated and the consequences thereof are really not that big of a deal in the long term. They're, like, annoying right now, but the way that it was changed is concerning. And I think that if we look at Bitcoin as this experiment that may determine the future outcome for all of humanity, which I don't think that's a very far stretch to say that if we do get Bitcoin wrong, you know, the world might be fucked if we get Bitcoin wrong, mm-hmm. in so many words. And so I think I want to start talking about this because I want the narrative to become one of extreme caution. Like, it's like we're working around the doomsday button. We want to make sure nobody accidentally pushes.
You got to get on Why Are We Bullish with this thesis? Because that was a pretty good 10 minutes. And if you haven't, you know, said that out loud off the cuff, that wasn't bad. Now, there's two things I want to ask you about at the risk of going down a little bit of rabbit hole, but fuck it, we'll do it anyway. Funny, do you know what Mario Gibney's doing now, by the way?
He's doing something in AI.
He's doing AI safety. And we had him on here because he's a friend of mine, a friend of the show. And I want to talk to him about AI safety because I find that interesting. And one of the reasons I find it really interesting is because, as you know, as is your belief about Bitcoin, the stakes are so high if we get it wrong. The thing about Bitcoin, and I don't know if this is pushback or not, but the thing about Bitcoin that I think we find ourselves ignoring sometimes in favor of kind of calcifying what we know to be right about Bitcoin is that if we get Bitcoin wrong, we can iterate, right? With other high-risk technologies, other high-risk, high-reward, human projects, human progress projects, space race, for example, things like that, iterating is more difficult. In AI, for example, if we get general AI wrong the first time we really have something with some firepower, it's over, right? We lose that fight. There's no way to claw it back, to pull the plug, to turn it off. Bitcoin, I find myself split. I'm curious if, you know, it sounds like you've thought about it. I want you to expand on it a bit if you have. It seems like we have an opportunity to iterate on Bitcoin more and more to find what works and find what doesn't. But also, I think I share your view that I want to be careful. We're working around the doomsday button, like you said. And it's interesting because when I think about, Francis's kind of the origin point of what he thinks, and it sounds like you're drawing from this a little bit too, between your conversations with him and maybe you've read Isaiah's Job. The message loses potency when we water it down for people who don't really care about the outcome the way that we do, don't really care about the tools the way that we do. Should we be considering iterating on Bitcoin a threat? Should we really try and just drive what we have forward as much as we can and see where it takes us before we start making changes? Or should we make the changes in anticipation of problems that haven't yet arisen? It's a difficult question to answer. I'm wondering if you have a thought on that.
Yeah. So, I really like this concept of the Cobra effect. And I think I might've told this story, with Len at some point. I don't know if it was on this show or something else, but the Cobra effect is literally like, it's the story of central planning. It's what has happened with every single time any government in the world has tried to do anything for the history of the world. They've all been Cobra effect. And the Cobra effect is basically like you had the British ruling India in the 1700s, and there were too many cobras in Delhi. And so they decided to institute a bounty on the cobras, and they didn't really know what they were doing. Much like the people who pushed the Taproot activation through very quickly, didn't know all the details. There were some unknown facts involved. And essentially what they ended up doing was making the bounty on a single cobra like 3 months' salary for an average Indian person. So you ended up with this newly rich class of cobra hunters who very quickly ran out of cobras and then started farming the cobras. And the British went for several years paying bounties on these farmed cobras before eventually figuring out that there was no more cobra hunters and they were being taken advantage of, at which point they were outraged and canceled the Cobra bounty, which caused all of the Cobra farmers to release their Cobras. And so now you had like, you basically had, and this is the part where I say this has happened with every single government in every single decision ever. You had the government getting together to make a decision about something that seems kind of simple, making a fairly straightforward decision without considering what kind of second order effects might come into play. And one very simple outcome that probably could have been predicted, like I've told this story a million times, and a lot of the time when I tell the story, people predict the fact that they started farming midway through the story. So it's not super complicated. But the fact that they didn't predict this means that the policy that they instituted had the exact opposite outcome of what they were trying to do. And that's my worry when you get into trying to make changes on incredibly complex systems. And that kind of hubris that, like, we can design everything, we can design for every possible outcome, we are able to design things perfectly, essentially, is the conceit in there. And that's something that comes from the Ethereum community. That's something you see all the time. They think they can build really an unlimited, infinitely complicated attack surface. And we've seen time and time again that it's just a terrible idea, right? From like the DAO hack to like however many Web3 hacks, you know, there's a Web3 hack like every week.
Yeah.
And that's because you've got people who are making design decisions rapidly that they can't possibly understand. And so that's my worry with changing Bitcoin, is that we get our best and our brightest minds together and we make some changes that we all agree are a very good idea. And we miss something, like we missed, like if somebody had been during the Taproot activation, if somebody had been like, hey guys, we can't do Taproot because it'll allow NFTs on Bitcoin, that probably would have killed the whole idea.
Probably.
If there would have been someone predicting this one outcome, and there wasn't. There was not enough brain power and we didn't get it right. And the idea that we can just always get everything right in the future is just, it's foolish. Like we're going to make mistakes. And I think that we need to provide as little room for those mistakes to affect the core functionality of Bitcoin as possible. And so, like, I think we're rapidly approaching a point where the actual consensus mechanism, everything related to consensus, and the majority of the core functionality of Bitcoin needs to just stop changing. And
at some point,
I think it will. And there is an almost infinite amount of stuff that can be built with small compromises on layer twos like Liquid and Lightning. And, you know, we don't really have to give up any of the core fundamentals of Bitcoin to be able to do that. And at the same time, we don't necessarily need the world's largest trustless supercomputer to be securing every single piece of information in the world. That makes no sense. Like the tracking of these sats that supposedly track the link to these pictures, like that's just, it's just a bad use of resources, right? Like it's completely stupid. It would be just as good if it was in a spreadsheet.
It's Dave, you know, I was going to ask you if, in your view, you know, when you hear people talk about consensus rules, you know, it's you know, ordinals and inscriptions are within consensus rules, all this stuff. Have we seen the death of consensus rules? In my view, we have. I think we have. Bitcoin, by and large, I think as we hit some threshold of users, of active users, people who want to transact on the network, et cetera, we have to ossify the core function of the network. And I think we've passed that point. Honestly, I think we passed it a while ago. There's obviously tons of debate about speedy trial and speed trial user activated softworks, and what role should the miners play? What role should the users play? If every user becomes a node runner, how can we sit there? Like, they're not really informed. They're at the sort of, you know, they're malleable the same way that they're malleable on Twitter when it comes to something so important, like, you know, as global money. I don't know. You know, I've not given much thought to hard forks in Bitcoin because I'm not, to be honest with you, I've only been in Bitcoin since 2017, late 2017. Didn't take it really interested in it until 2018 or 19. And one of the things that, you know, I think to me makes the most sense is adding this layer of friction, which is nearly insurmountable, to people who want to make changes to the core code or the core functionality of Bitcoin. It's a hard fork. If you want to change something that most Bitcoiners don't want to change, or the core Bitcoiners don't want to change, or people who hold Bitcoin, right? Everyone is a Bitcoiner at a different level. You hold it, use it, you're a miner, whatever. If they don't want to change, if they don't want to switch networks, if they don't want to move hash, whatever, then you lose. But to do this change, you have to find not just enough people to help you push through a speedy trial, but also you need people who are willing to move and store value on the new token. This is the hurdle that we're not using now. And I think we probably need to start using in the future. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be very hard, if not impossible, to get through any hard fork for any reason that was not like life-threatening to the network, I guess. So if there was like, if there was a very serious bug that could be corrected with a hard fork, we'd probably be able to push that kind of thing through. But short of something like that, I don't think there's another hard fork is ever going to happen. And it would just be, you know, this whole ordinals discussion shows you how even within the core community of Bitcoin maximalists, it's very hard to get everyone to agree on anything. And so these are not like, you know, the real consensus layer, the real security layer of Bitcoin is not actually the proof of work. It's the consensus that proof of work validates. And that consensus is a social layer that essentially comes from a giant group of disagreeable assholes that, like, how are you going to get us all to agree on something? Like, it's across the world, across different, you know, languages, countries, user bases, it seems really unlikely that we're ever going to see that. Things like the speedy trial, I think the speedy trial is probably dead as a concept just because of how it went last time. There is a sort of small core group of very technical, intelligent Bitcoiners like Rodolfo and Peter Todd and some other guys that are behind the idea that we need some more technical changes that would require a soft fork. And I respect those people. And so I want to hear what they have to say, but like, it's from my perspective, it's an uphill battle to convince me that we even need a soft fork for anything. And I'm not convinced yet.
Hmm. I think about what's next for Bitcoin as the attacks intensify from state actors, from other chains. I suspect we're going to see more and more attacks from Ethereum as Ethereum starts to wobble. And it is. I know I haven't read that Vitalik post from the other day yet, but even he thinks the attack surfaces over there are growing and the complexity of the network is becoming too burdensome, too cumbersome, and it's going to start causing problems. And I'm curious as to how the low T fellas over at Bankless are going to spin that. I might have to listen to that show. It sucks, Dave. I got to listen to that show more often than I want, but I might have to listen to hear how they spin it because I'm curious. How do two guys who have capitalized on nearly every fraud and scam on that network over the last 5 years or 3 years, I guess, how are they going to backtrack and say, you know what, maybe Vitalik's right. That basically eliminates all your sponsor dollars. It eliminates all your pump and dumps. It eliminates all your products where you do the due diligence on behalf of your listener base. The horseshit disappears when push comes to shove. And I think as the horseshit outside of Bitcoin starts to disappear, everyone is going to come for the king. There hasn't been a real shot at the king, you know, since what? I don't know. Bcash? Does that even count? I don't even think that counts. And soon you're going to have a lot more firepower coming in, heading our way, I think.
Yeah, it's I've said for a long time that the real use case for Ethereum is nothing to do with the technology or the money. And this is why I think Ordinals is going to be gone in a year, is that the real use case for Ethereum is just providing a very large user base of millions of people who are high-risk investors, or maybe you could say gamblers, people who have a very high risk tolerance, who are willing to take extreme risks on things that they don't understand. And that is why, you know, we've seen the ICO craze be so successful on there. We've seen the NFT craze be so successful on there. They ran into an issue where it's not a very technically good product, obviously, for what it claims to do. It's now 8 years in and it's pretending to be a world computer that doesn't really have the capacity to compute anything. And, you know, at some point you'd think that that logic would get through to people, but it doesn't actually matter because nobody's actually there for the technology. They're there because there's a large group of people that they can sell their bags to. Mm. And a whole bunch of people came over to Bitcoin from that group because there are now NFTs on Bitcoin. And some of those people came over as trolls to be like, haha, Bitcoiners, now you have to put up with NFTs. But there's a good percentage of Bitcoiners who got sort of fooled by that as well, because it's a frustrating thing when you're in Bitcoin, and even more so if you're an artist, wherein, you know, you've got all these people making all this money on their pump and dumps. And now we're sitting across the hall holding our Bitcoins. Maybe we made money, maybe we didn't, but we're not making like overnight 10Xs that we just cash back into US dollars the way that somebody holding Solana did. And so you see things that you know are stupid, things that you know are wrong, but then the people engaging in them are making a lot of money. And that holds true for NFTs as well. You got a lot of artists who, all the people at the Bitcoin conference who are not selling NFTs, frankly, the NFT artists are obviously like, the quality of the art is very low compared to the quality of the physical art, right? And yet they're making a lot more money in most cases than the physical artists. And so when now this new thing comes along and it's like, hey, we got this, it's now on Bitcoin. And there's a pretty quick narrative to look at it as like, you know, this is not a scam because it's on Bitcoin. Now they've kind of got like a layer of social permission to try to chase those gains that they've been frustrated seeing their idiot cousin on the other side of the aisle get, right? Everybody's got an idiot cousin who lies about how much money he made on crypto. Like, it's just, right?
Yeah. It is true. It's like an affinity scam, right? The way that Bitcoiners are so quick to call out affinity scams when they're, you know, using Bitcoin to shill another token, but they can't make the connection or don't want to make the connection, I think, in some cases, to the NFTs and the JPEGs and all that nonsense. I don't know. It's stupid. But anyway, look, to your point, this will be gone in a year, I think. Boomer in the chat, you know, high fees are a way to stop people from fucking with the base layer. I think that's 100% true. And as network adoption grows and as the price of Bitcoin goes up, it's, you know, I think that's probably true, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, Dave, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you coming on a Tuesday for me, since we got another show tomorrow with a couple of agriculture guys from, I think, Ontario, maybe. I don't want to speak. Len knows him better than I do. Before I let you go, you're coming to the conference in Toronto, yeah?
Yeah.
Are you making it out to any dinners, any events? Like, if people want to meet you, shake your hand. Second most handsome guy on this podcast for sure. But although you claim to be the most handsome in the space.
You know what? We haven't even gotten to that, Joey. I have something to send you here.
Oh no.
Yeah. Well, so I have a whole team of people. I get a lot of these.
Where are you sending me this? What are you sending me?
I'm gonna send this to you on Telegram here.
Okay.
It's just one of the several thousand letters like this that I get every day. Where did it go here? Yeah, I mean, I get organic letters of support where people just like write in. It's kind of similar to like Santa Claus, I guess, in that like there's just like a lot of letters coming in and that's, you know, I think it's 16 people now here that all they do is just deal with the fact that these letters are coming in at such a rate. I'll just forward you this.
I'm waiting to see this.
Yeah.
I gotta find a way to share this tab without sharing our entire chat and all my Telegram chats. But yeah. I will try and find a way.
It's gonna be possible, I'm sure. I gotta download this thing here now.
This is not the content, people. If you're on the audio side, you got to come over to the video to see what exactly this guy's about to send me. God only knows.
It's representative of most of the other ones that I'm getting. This one, I'm sending you this one because I mostly get them it's physical. I don't know why people write so many physical letters still.
Oh, here we go.
But this is a digital one, so it's easier to send you in theory.
Like you'd never know because you've been sending it for 5 minutes. So
yeah, I know. I'm struggling with my phone here for some reason. It's not showing up. But okay, this will work better.
Here we go.
And yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of dispute between the two of us, I think, about who's the strongest or best looking Bitcoiner. We've never met in person, but I think you're gonna cave on the strongest when we do. And the best looking, I think, makes a lot of sense. I would agree.
Here we go.
You'd be like, you'd be very popular in prison. But I think like my personal niche is like I usually tend to prefer adult human females.
Okay,
and I think I'm gonna have the
thing he sent me.
I think I'm gonna have the lockdown on that
this
group.
Is so, so dumb. This is so dumb. I'm disappointed with Celia, okay? Because I really thought I had her in the bag. Dear, if you're on audio, I'll read this for you. Okay, it says, "Dear Len and Joey, I'm writing to express my strong endorsement of Dave Bradley as the strongest and best looking Bitcoin entrepreneur." That's a qualifier, by the way, Bitcoin entrepreneur in Canada.
It is, yeah.
In my experience, Dave has consistently demonstrated how good looking he was by undressing himself for the benefit of others at any given chance. He modeled CoinKite's sauna hat. There's a photo attached, and almost broke the internet due to his hotness, as you can view by yourself. He is also strong and can easily carry 2 or 3 C-Funks with his bare hands for transportation purposes. Sincerely, C to the Funk. Now, I'm disappointed in that. I got to tell you, like, I was talking to the organizers of the conference today. I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit. If I can keep from getting hurt playing football over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to run against people 40 yards. Since I always challenge people to 40-yard dashes on the show, I don't know how many times I'll do it. I don't know if there's going to be a contest fee for that, but there's going to be a giveaway, $250 worth of stuff. There may or may not be some CoinKite stuff in there. If you can beat me in a 40-yard dash, I don't know if it's going to be on grass or on pavement, but Dave, if you come to run, I'll pop the tarp for our sprint and we'll see who's better looking. How's that? you can wear your hat and I'll just pop the tarp and we'll have a go. What do you say?
Sure. I kind of doubt I can beat you in a 40-yard dash. I'm faster than you'd think for a very large man who's 40, but you should be faster than me. If you're not,
I'm pretty fast. I don't know if there's going to be, I thought about asking those guys, this is like overtime now, whatever. I thought about asking those guys to put up to bring a power rack. Can we rent a power rack and have like 405 there? Something, right? Like we should be able to do it. I don't know. I haven't really given it much thought, but it might be a little late now for that. Maybe next year we'll try it. I love it. Dave Bradley, where can people find you if they want to find out more about you? And pump your boy Madex too one more time. That guy deserves it.
Yeah. So have a look at this amazing piece behind there. It is a really weak move to be on a podcast, especially if you're the host, without a Madex behind you. So like you should probably buy this one before anyone else does, Joey.
I got to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's you could save up. There might be an installment plan, but I would recommend somebody buy this before it's gone. It'll probably be gone pretty fast. They sell pretty quickly these days. You can check out that at madex.art. You can also check out Bitcoin Well at bitcoinwell.com. We talked about the investor section of the page, and we've also got our online portal. We'd love to hear feedback from people trying the online portal. And bitcoinrodeo.com or the Bitcoin Rodeo on Twitter. And you can find me on Twitter as Bitcoin Brains. And you can also check out my website, which has some very important information, as well as, you know, I have a lot of endorsements, like I mentioned about my
the letters,
like
the
my letters title, right? And there's a testimonial, there's a video link to the testimonial from Daniel Smith, the Premier of Alberta, about my handsomeness as well. So no. You can find that on the website at bitcoinbrains.com. There's also a very important section highlighting some of the stakes that I've had. And I would recommend people spend a lot of time on that website. I think that's it. I think that's everything I have to show at the moment.
Unbelievable.
And then, yeah, come to the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast or the Canadian Bitcoiners conference as well. And I don't have anything planned for after parties and stuff like that. I'm going to just kind of go with the flow, but I imagine there'll be some, and whichever ones we go to will be the good ones to go to, obviously. So
100%, 100%. The ones, the off the grid ones will be the best. God bless everyone. Thanks for listening, watching. We'll see you soon. Good job there, Dave.